So are the godless Chinese going to steal Sebastian Giovinco away from us? Should I be worried about this?
Well, I mean, we'll see. It's interesting in that his agent kind of came out yesterday and said that, you know, an offer has been tabled, and a huge one, for his services. And that he's, you know, obviously he's got to take it to Seba and Toronto about it. Mm-hmm. You know, I talked to Toronto FC yesterday, and they said they haven't been contacted by anyone representing any Chinese club. So, I mean, it very well could be that a table, an offer is on the offer, as his agent said. But as far as PFC is, what they're telling me, that, you know, they know nothing about it. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. We'll see. It's certainly an interesting, you know, development. That's, you know, the last two off seasons have been pretty quiet for Toronto FC, and I think that's a good thing. But this has kind of livened things up a little bit. So we'll see how it plays out.
And the reporter who reported it is Tancredi Palmieri, right?
Yeah, I mean it was him, and then but I think also D'Amico, who is I can't remember his first name, but Seba's agent.
Okay,
he said it on Sky Italia, which is kind of like the leading all sports channel in Italy, and apparently he said it in an interview with that as well. So I mean, this isn't just hearsay. I mean, the agent apparently did actually say it.
You know, I mean, we've seen the Chinese Super League, you know, become more and more of a factor. I mean, this year Oscar was sold by Chelsea. I still can't really make heads or tails of the whole situation with Diego Costa. How much of that was real and how much of that was just, you know, agent and club sort of trying to play games. But
right.
from Giovinco's point of view, beyond money, that sounds silly to say that, I know, but beyond money, what would be in it for him? Because, you know, look, this guy, I think a lot of people, John, when he came over here, thought, you know, okay, this is, it's an attempt to kind of to get full playing time to try to get back into the picture with the with the Italian national team. I think a lot of people looked at it as a bit of a gamble, but is China any more of a gamble than MLS was for this guy?
Well, in terms of a national team perspective, no. You know, it's interesting to know Graziano Pella, who used to play with Southampton, he moved to China this offseason, and, you know, he was, you know, he had a very strong Euro, mm-hmm. and then he was called up subsequently when he went to China, so it didn't seem to hurt his career. So from that perspective, I don't think it'll necessarily hurt Giovinco. But, I mean, you know, in terms of, like, the motivation as to why he might go, it's, you know, the money's a big issue, and let's not forget, for all of, you know, he's certainly taken Toronto as his second home, and he's, you know, he's fully kind of, you know, he's embraced Toronto and living here and everything. But let's not forget, you know, if MLS, he didn't, you know, pay him big bucks, he wouldn't have been here. So,
right.
You know, he's not averse to money. So is my point. So it's not inconceivable that, you know, he would have his head turned by a mega, mega money offer from China and potentially go. And, you know, there's that. And, you know, China, it is an emerging league. I mean, as you said, Oscar is there now, Ramirez, John Obi Mikel, Hulk, there, Carlos Tevez. So it's a burgeoning league. And it seems like the level of play is really sort of, just by the influx of stars that they're bringing in, that the level of play has increased. So it's kind of similar to MLS, I guess, in a sense, in the way, you know, when he first came here, it was a burgeoning league, and the level of the play on the field was increasing. So in many ways, I find it similar to, you know, the situation he faced when he first came to MLS in 2015.
With this out there now, you know, I mean, you mentioned it's been a pretty quiet couple of off seasons for Toronto. Yeah. I see your quiet last off season certainly was. How does Toronto FC prevent this from becoming an issue? You know, because it's going to be, once it's out there, people are going to be talking about it. You know, I don't know. I'm not saying Sebastian Giovinco is necessarily going to be distracted by it, but what does Toronto FC do here to prevent it from becoming an issue? And maybe tell our listeners a little bit, pardon me, about the process involved here, because this isn't simply a matter of club gives agent offer, agent takes it to player, they sign it, and they go. And I mean, they do have to buy him out, do they not?
Right.
Toronto, buy him out from Toronto SC. So walk us through that process a little bit, if you could.
Yeah, so it's not enough for, you know, the agent to say, well, we, you know, he has an offer from China and he's going to go. I mean, Toronto FC has to agree to sell him, right? They mm-hmm. own him outright. He's in year three of a five-year deal. So,
but you can negotiate terms before you...
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, okay. Yeah, the player would, you know, oftentimes before a transfer is, like, secured, the player secures, terms with the new team.
Right.
And then the transfer is secured. So, you know, and maybe that's being done right now through his agent. But at the end of the day, you know, Toronto FC owns him lock, stock, and barrel, and they would have to agree to, like, a transfer fee. You figure, you know, they spent, there's a lot of rumors about what they spent to get him from Juventus, but, you know, you have to suspect that they would get a lot more from whatever Chinese league team is securing, just because of, you know, the Chinese league is throwing a lot of money around now. So if they want to get him, they're likely going to have to pay big. So, you know, Toronto would definitely recoup whatever fee they paid for him. In terms of what they're going to have to do to keep him, I mean, you know, maybe it's naive of me, but I suspect that he's very happy here. Mm-hmm. And unless, you know, I just can't really see him making the move to China, regardless if they're going to, you know, throw a lot of money on him. He's just really adopted Toronto as his second home. His young daughter was born here in Toronto just before the Christmas break. And I think, you know, yes, it's true that he moved from Italy to MLS, you know, a few years ago for a mega money deal. That's one thing. But to move, you know, from MLS to China, that's a pretty big cultural shock. I think that's a much more big cultural shock, you know, moving from Italy to Canada. And as I said, I think he's just really sort of, you know, embraced living in Canada. I mean, he really loves, living in Toronto and loves the city. So it's, I'm not sure that they would have to do a terrible amount to keep him here, but we'll see. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
All right, let's put Cervenko aside for a minute. Toronto FC is in camp. You know, you've said and you've written, and other people have written as well, that there is, you know, this team's kind of growing up. Yeah, the season didn't end, I don't think, the way anybody necessarily wanted it then, although they certainly, getting the championship is a feather in anyone's cap. But is there a more settled feeling around the team this year, more a realization just how close they got, and that, you know, fundamentally you could make no major changes to this team, I would think, and most people would give you a pretty good shot at going back?
Yeah, I mean, I think absolutely. I mean, to answer your, you know, the first part of your question, I think there's absolutely a sense of stability and comfort, and everything is, you know, we are where we are and we're in a good place and we feel good about it. It's interesting to note that all 11 starters from the MLS Cup final on December 10th are, you know, currently under contract. So there's a good, solid core here, with Michael Bradley and Josie Altidore and Cervenko, but also youngsters coming up like Jay Chapman and Jonathan Osorio. Those are kind of young Canadian players who I'm really big on, and I think they're, you know, they're important pieces going forward. You know, we've said so long, it's great to have designated players and big stars, but you also need those support players. And I think those are two young players that, are just as vital to the future of this franchise. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's, you know, they realized how close they came last year. They should have won that. Mm-hmm. I think there's a greater respect for Toronto FC around the league too. I think, you know, getting to that final and coming so close, I think, you know, everyone else in the league they realize that, we can't take them lightly anymore, that they're not sort of the big spending team that fell short, that they're to be taken seriously and they are a serious contender. And I think, as I said, getting to that MLS Cup final, that sent a serious message to the rest of the league. And not just getting to the final, but the way they did it too. I mean, the way they absolutely destroyed New York City FC in that quarterfinal series, and the way they, you know, that epic semifinal against Montreal, they showed that they can win, convincingly, and that they can win, coming from behind and when they have to sort of, grit it out. So I think they elevated their game over the playoffs, and absolutely the rest of the league took notice.
Would you anticipate that, you know, the 3-5-2 is the way forward from the start of the year, you know, until something happens and Greg Vanney feels that he has to change it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think they found a great deal of success with that formation when they changed to it, you know, in the latter half of the season. And, you know, I think it just really brought the best out of the team, and it really sort of got the most out of their strengths, and it really allowed guys like Stephen Bateshore and Justin Morrow to, you know, to get forward down the flanks more and really kind of give the attack some width. You know, I don't think Greg is necessarily married to that, and I suspect we're going to see, you know, sometimes he'll use the 3-5-2, but sometimes he'll go back to the diamond formation. I think, like any coach, it's all about flexibility, right, and recognizing the situation and the opponent and when to, you know, use whatever tactics you have to use. But I suspect, you know, the 3-5-2 will be, you know, maybe not the default tactical framework that he uses, but certainly, you know, one of the main ones that he uses throughout the rest of the campaign.